From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made somewhere in Monroe County last Saturday morning. The parents in this particular house were trying to get the kids out of bed because their 12-year-old had a game at 9 a.m. That would be followed by another game at 1 p.m. and a 5 p.m. game about an hour south of Rochester for one child, one 12-year-old. After all, if you want to make your high school soccer team, you've got to develop your skills. It's ultra competitive. Got to play for your school and whatever travel leagues you can find as well. You got to do it year round and focus on one. Or do you? Most of the world's best athletes were not one sport stars growing up. They played multiple sports. They had a balanced athletic schedule. And doctors are warning that if we overtrain kids, we can hurt them. They can get injured. And for developing bodies, those injuries can have a long-lasting effect. Perhaps you saw the op-ed in the New York Times last month titled, "Baseball is Injuring Too Many Kids." The author was Yahoo Sports columnist Jeff Passan, who wrote about how we train young pitchers. And he wrote, quote, "This is a recipe for disaster. According to a study by the American Sports Medicine Institute, kids who pitched competitively more than 8 months a year were five times as likely to hurt their arms than those who limited themselves to fewer than eight." End quote. This hour, a conversation about limits, balance, injuries, and expectations with our kids. Let me go ahead and welcome my guests. Dr. Michael Maloney is here, professor in the Department of Orthopedics at UR Medicine. Dr. Maloney, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Also here is Dr. Katie Rizzoni. She's an assistant professor in the Departments of Orthopedics and Rehabilitation and Pediatrics at UR Medicine. Dr. Rizzoni, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Haley Pilates here, a sophomore at Livonia High School and a cross-country runner. Haley, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And the Siragusa family is here. I'll say hello to their mother first. Lisa Siragusa is here. Lisa, welcome to you.
Thank you so much.
And Jessica Siragusa is here, sophomore at Mercy High School and a volleyball player and a track athlete. Jessica, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Charlie's here. Charlie Siragusa is a student at McQuaid and a volleyball player. Charlie, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Dr. Rizzoni, Are we overdoing it with our kids? I told the story without naming the family of having a 12-year-old, three games in one day, crisscrossing the county. I could relate stories in my own family, feeling like we've lost control. You know, that you got to focus on one sport if you want to make a high school team and get a college scholarship, and if you want to be good, and if you don't do it, other kids will, and you know, damn the consequences. There may be a lack of balance. There may be a lack of extracurriculars. Where's the time for homework? Is that overblowing it, or is that what's happening?
I think that's a great summary, and I think anyone listening thought to myself, oh, that's our family. And I think it is a big pressure. It's pressure from, you know, other families that are involved. It's pressure from the coach. We have these expectations, I think, in our country. We value sports greatly. But then there's also, I think, multifactorial, you know, behind it that they contribute, and that I think besides valuing sports, there is this expectation of this may lead me, you know, to a greater level of participation, potentially a college scholarship, even potentially some type of professional level engagement. And that's hard because, as you said, even to make a high school team at this point in time, that pressure is there that if you don't get your kid on a soccer club when they are 7 or 8 years old, they won't have that opportunity to even make that decision.
By the way, Dr. Rizzoni is participating in a conversation online about youth sports safety tomorrow. It is a Reddit Ask Me Anything online chat from 11 to 1 tomorrow with Dr. Rizzoni. You can post questions Friday morning. So tomorrow morning starting around 8 a.m., just jump on reddit.com/r/science and follow the conversation that starts at 11, but you can get your questions in on that Reddit thread starting at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning with Dr. Rizzoni. Dr. Maloney, thoughts on whether, you know, whether that really is the reality for many families now?
I can speak firsthand as a father of four, and that scenario you portrayed is very familiar. You know, I think there's a huge challenge. I think most of us adults here participated in sports growing up and recognize the value that participating in sports meant to all of us, and being on a team and working hard at something, being the best that you can be. And I think those values that we've learned in sports then translate into what we ultimately do and become. So we want our children to kind of have those same experiences. But I do think it's kind of gone you know, the pendulum swings, and we're certainly at one extremes. And I think that professionally, certainly, I came from clinic this morning, and I saw multiple athletes, high school aged, with overuse injuries.
Well, this is why I kind of want to focus on it. Before we get to the athletes in the room, and I want to know about their schedules and how they're trying to achieve balance if they can. I remember when I was in high school, my twin brother, see, I threw hard, but he threw with movement. And I was one of these guys who, you know, by the time I got to high school, I got lit up because I couldn't move the baseball, where my twin brother was a left-hander, and he could really move it. He was a very good pitcher, and he thought he had to throw all the time. So when my mother was out of the house, he would throw a tennis ball against the garage, and I bet you he thought he threw 400 pitches a day. And it's all we did, trying to, you know, move the ball. And eventually, right before baseball season, senior year, he was diagnosed with, and I'm going to try to remember, epiphysitis, I think was inflammation of the growth plate, correct, if I remember. And they told him, you're not only not pitching, but this, you know, this could actually hurt you long term. Tone it down.
Absolutely. Had the same scenario this morning. High school pitcher who came in and told me he was pitching two games a week, and his growth plates are still wide open. And I looked at the athlete and his father, and I said, if you look at the professional athletes, they get 5 days of rest. None of these guys are pitching twice every week. How do we expect, you know, growing, developing young boys and girls to be able to do something that we don't expect out of our professional athletes? So he had the same diagnosis, epiphysitis. It's a little eager shoulder. And there's no question that I think we are subjecting our kids to too much, a lot of intensity, a lot of year-round training. And, you know, there's a balance and a trade-off, but we are definitely in the medical community seeing more and more of these injuries.
Doctors Maloney and Rizzoni, let our listeners know not only about injury for kids, but for the parents who think, well, but if they don't get injured, they've got the advantage. Is the injury a problem in the short term, or can there be long-term impacts on a developing body?
I mean, certainly there's going to be long-term impacts in terms of specifically ACL tear. You're going to increase your risk of early onset arthritis oftentimes, particularly if there's meniscal involvement. Mm-hmm. Certainly we know concussion can have both short and long-term effects, and we're really still, you know, researching on that. And just to add to what Dr. Maloney said, I just think, you know, we are expecting kids to do things that we are asking collegiate and professional athletes to do in terms of, you know, I'm going to use baseball as an example to continue with the theme. You know, you used to play baseball in the spring. You'd play, you'd finish that season, you'd probably play some more just free play is what I would call it during the summer with the folks in your neighborhood and just really do lots of diverse types of motion. Now you have kids that not just have baseball practice and games, they're on more than one team at a time. They're on their school team, they're on the travel team, and then they're expected to do position practice as well. So if you're a pitcher, you have very specific, you know, practices that you have to go to additionally. Some of these kids have trainers, athletic trainers that work with them specifically, and then have additional skills coaches behind, you know, beyond that. And as Dr. Maloney pointed out, we're expecting them to do all this in addition to lengthening their bones in a healthy manner and making sure their muscles and tissues that they are breaking down each day at these things have enough time to heal.
Doctors, are you saying to parents and coaches, this is too much? Have you ever said that, Dr. Rizzoni?
I unfortunately have to say that pretty much every day. I agree with Dr. Maloney. This morning in clinic, I had three young athletes, you know, that were really probably doing too much at their age. And there's great benefits. We know we have an obesity epidemic in this country. We know that there's both physical and mental and emotional benefits of being active. But at the same time, it is almost like this tide, the pendulum, as Dr. Maloney had pointed out, has just swung too far that way. And it's hard to pull back. It's hard to be the one, that parent saying, no, we're going to go on vacation. I'm not going to go to this tournament. This is important for us to have family time. And when you do that, the other parents, you know, you have judgments from them. You have judgments from the coach. The kid is scared. Am I going to lose my spot? You know, that isn't discussions that we should be having. We should be protecting family time and spending that. And again, doing free play activities where you can enjoy physical activity for the rest of your life and actually probably reduce your injury risk and reduce your risk of obesity. But to go back to your first part of the question, there is short and long term impacts of this, and we are not focused on that.
I don't think anybody is arguing we don't want physical activity for kids, but it's about, you know, the families where a child is told, You're going to have to choose basketball or soccer, basketball or baseball. You know, as if you can't do multiple things. And I've seen spouses argue, you know, within that. I've seen spouses, two parents, arguing about, you know, we've got to take this vacation, or this, you know, this child has got to be here at this time. It can be a strain. Dr. Maloney, have you said, you know, gear it back if you can?
In the last 2 hours.
In the last 2 hours,
yeah,
today.
Absolutely. And again, I echo a lot of what Dr. Rizzoni commented on. It's a huge challenge. And as a parent, you see both sides of it. And again, you want the best for your children always, and you want them to be able to have the experiences that you think are going to benefit them. But I think it's unrealistic that we expect our kids are all going to get scholarships and they're all going to play, you know, on TV someday and, you know, make that be their living. And I in some ways use the experience of working with young athletes as an opportunity to hopefully educate them, help them understand better how to take care of themselves, what they need to do to condition themselves properly, when is too much, and how they're able to work through injuries, when it's safe to, when it's not. And then also to educate the parents that, you know, they really have to be the advocate for their child. There's tremendous pressure, as was mentioned, coaches, peers, pressure on themselves, and so much of their identity at that age is really tied to who they are and the teams that they're on. They get injured, they come out of that. That's a big issue. So it's hard for them to kind of be able to handle all that. It's a lot.
Well, I want to talk to the athletes in the room, and I'm going to start with the mom. Lisa Siragusa is Charlie and Jessica's mom. It's an athletic family. And Lisa, if you could grab that mic. There you go. See, it's a packed studio here, a lot of people here. First of all, why don't you tell me a little bit about what schedules are like in your family with athletes for kids? You're smiling.
Yeah. Well, pretty much every day of the week, including weekends, is spent in a gym at this point. Both kids are very involved in volleyball. Jessica took up track this year. She tried to be successful at volleyball and at track. She was successful, mm-hmm. unfortunately. Dr. Rizzoni kind of pulled her back a little bit right now because she did too much, and it's hard. It's hard at this point at their age to tell them that they have to pull back, they have to stop. But, you know, we've learned that you have to listen to your body, you have to listen closely, you can't push yourself, and you have to, just echoing what Dr. Maloney said, condition. You have to condition as much as you train. Otherwise, your body's going to break down before you're able to be successful at your sport.
Lisa, do you feel pressure just in any way from other parents who, you know, I don't know if the kids are feeling pressure to ramp up training, practice schedules, et cetera, to be competitive athletes? Do you feel it from other parents at all?
I don't know if I feel it from other parents necessarily. I think that you feel it from coaches, and it's not necessarily what they say, it's just, you know, when there's a practice, you feel pressure to have your child to practice. If there's an AP exam, like Jessica had today, you feel pressure, you know, the night before or the weekend before to have that child at practice because there's four other girls on the team that have the same AP exam. And, you know, I know she feels pressure, and in turn, my husband and I feel pressure to have her there and have her available to be there, have our family available. So I personally feel more pressure, and it might just be internally, but, you know, just keeping the kids to the schedule that is set, if that makes sense.
Sure, sure. And have there been moments where your family, maybe you and your husband have asked, are we ever going to get a vacation, or are we going to get time out?
Yeah, yeah. Yes. We used to enjoy, you know, a set family vacation, and for the past few years, that has not happened. It's kind of, we try to like work it around sports schedules, but definitely the schedule that we enjoyed when they were in grammar school, it's pretty much impossible to do now to keep the kids as active as they want to be. And I think the pressures that they feel to be involved in the activities at a competitive level. To just take them out, I think, is just, they feel that it could be detrimental to their participation, to keeping their starting spot. So, yeah.
Sure. And, Let's talk to the students who are in the room, the student athletes who are in the room, and there's nothing more annoying, I think, than adults telling students, like, well, when we were your age, it wasn't this way. I mean, I don't want to be that guy, but there has been a lot of change. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that I was in high school athletics, and you could play multiple sports. Not to say the kids don't play multiple sports now. They do, but just with my nephews, I'm blown away at the schedule and the expectation of what they have to keep up with year-round. And I'm curious, Charlie, you are a student at McQuaid. You're a volleyball player. Do you feel pressure? Do you see that expectation that athletes have to feel almost constantly tied to their sport?
I definitely do. I mean, when you're playing a sport, I mean, even at the high school level, when you're in high school season, it's practice after every school day. You have, and then you go to strength training. You have tournaments on the weekend. It's just you feel a ton of pressure from your coaches, and not in, like my mom said, it's not what they say all the time. A lot of times it's just you want to be there, you want to be with your team, so it's a lot of self-driven pressure.
Sure. It sounds like what your mom is saying is the coach isn't overtly saying you've got to be at every practice at every event, but when they set the schedule that includes here's your practice schedule, here are the game schedule, here's extra training, here's a, you feel compelled to be there because you want to be there. You want to be with your teammates. And the coach isn't saying you must, but maybe in the back of your mind you're thinking, I want to be there, and if I'm not, what's the consequence, right?
It's actually funny. Sometimes the coach can be saying the opposite thing, like, we don't want you to come. We want you to stay healthy. You don't have to participate in practice, but you still want to. You still want to be able to participate in the practice. You still want to be able to do the things that make you happy, like athletics. So,
do you wish they'd gear back the schedule somewhat then?
Honestly, no, I don't.
Your mom was immediately, yep. She was saying no.
That's, and I think that's what a lot, it's a very common misconception. It's that it's the coaches constantly pushing the athletes, and it's not a lot of the times. A lot of times it's the athletes pushing the athletes. So, they probably should tone down the schedule a bit, but no, I don't want them to.
All right, so Dr. Maloney, it sounds like we've got to be better at telling the kids no, because, of course, these are really driven young athletes, and they're going to want to push themselves, right? And occasionally the adults have to say no.
Absolutely, and I think that's where it comes back to, as a parent, you're your child's best advocate. And yes, they may want to go to every practice and every training session. And you know, there's certainly athletes who may get away with it, not have an injury, not have to kind of deal with, you know, being out of their sport for a while. But I think it's hard. You know, it's a very competitive society, and a lot of emphasis is placed on, you know, success in sports. You know, and I think from a social standpoint, the kids are feeling the pressure that they have to be there. So it's a challenge.
And here's the, I think, an important follow-up for Charlie is, you want to be there, you're pushing to be there, you enjoy it, it's what you love to do. If you did miss more practice, and the coach is saying it's okay if you don't go to every single event, whether it's practice, game, whatever, but if you did, would you lose a spot? Would you either lose a spot on a team or a starting spot? Are you concerned that that could happen?
I don't think you would necessarily lose a starting spot because you miss a practice, especially if the coach tells you you're not going to lose a starting spot.
Sure.
If you miss practice. But sometimes it can just be as simple as, okay, you're going to miss a game or a set because you missed the practice. So, and no one wants to miss the set because you missed practice. So I don't necessarily think you're going to lose a starting spot, but you can lose other things.
Any injuries, Charlie? Have you ever been injured?
Yes, I've had just kind of chronic patella tendonitis, which Dr. Maloney has amazingly found a way to get it under control, which I thank him.
Is that normal, Dr. Maloney?
So yeah, we would call that jumper's knee, right? Repetitive loading of the knee joint with sports that involve a lot of jumping. Volleyball probably is the biggest culprit, but we see it with runners, soccer players, basketball players, you know, anything that you're on the field cutting and running. Overuse and injury to the patellar tendon is fairly common.
Okay, how you feeling now? You said he's done an amazing job. You feel good?
It's feeling a lot better. It's feeling a lot better, and again, I just can't thank him enough for that, because it's made it much, much easier to be able to perform at the level that I want to perform at.
And Dr. Maloney, there are always going to be injuries. You could be somebody who plays a sport one time in your life and get injured. I mean, there's going to be some non-zero percentage of injuries that will happen. But are we seeing more of injuries like that just because of, you think, overuse or overtraining?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, let's bring in a sister. Jessica Siragusa is a sophomore at Mercy, a volleyball player and a track athlete. And somebody came in with crutches. Are those yours?
Yeah.
Are you all right? What's going on?
I started running track in the spring and trying to balance it with volleyball. And I think it just became overuse and my shins started bothering me. And I went to see Dr. Azzoni and I had to cut back now.
Okay, so it's a shin issue for you.
Yeah.
Is it pain just when you walk right now?
Kind of. It's gotten a lot better. I took a week off before and then I got an MRI to find out what was going on. And it turned out I had stress fractures, but now that I've cut back, it's gotten better. So.
When was the last time you had a week off from sports?
Not in a while, I guess.
A long time.
Yeah.
Is that strange?
Yeah.
Did you sort of feel like you were something was missing?
Yeah, I still go to all the meets for track, and I try to go to, and I'm going to go to my volleyball tournament this weekend to at least watch, but.
Did you feel at all, though, when you didn't have to perform for a week? Did it at all make you think, maybe the schedule's a little much?
I guess. I mean, it's a nice kind of outlet every night to go to practice, mm-hmm. but sometimes it does get hard balancing it with school.
I was going to ask about academics. Do you ever feel like athletics starts to get in the way of study?
I think it's important to like find a balance because you can't study all the time, so it's nice to have that break, but sometimes you feel like, oh, I need to be studying more. But some nights if you have a big test the next day and you have practice till 10 o'clock, sometimes it's hard. But
okay, so shin issue. We used to call them shin splints. Is that the same thing, Dr. Rizzoni? Is that what we're talking about here?
That's on the spectrum of overuse injuries. Unfortunately, Jessica's is a little bit more along, further on that spectrum because she does have stress fractures on both sides, which will heal, and she's going to get back to doing what she loves. I mean, based off of my research, looking at specialization in college athletes, all my data has shown that female athletes, I don't understand why yet, but female athletes are at higher risk of these types of what we would call overuse injuries. So a stress fracture is an overuse injury, tendonitis, strains, and sprains. And I still get back to the point that I think we treat kids like adults, which can be good. You have high expectations and to have people focus on their sports and to have them value that. But when you have coaches who they do a great job, most of them are volunteering their time and they really, really feel, you know, great bonds with the kids. And as we've talked about, wonderful character traits that you develop with this. But if you take what a drill is being done in an NFL team and you bring it down to a 9-year-old, you're going to have an increased risk of injury. And the same thing, if you take what Olympians are training for certain events and even bring it down to the high school level, you're going to have an increased risk of injury because you just can't take those rules and apply them to all ages. And I truly think we can't even apply them equally to all genders or even all sports because mm-hmm. my research has also shown that I think this kind of blanket recommendation against specialization is probably too much, is too nonspecific. And I mean, you look at the Olympics, there's no gymnasts over the age of 16, 17. Figure skating, same thing. Golf, tennis. There are certain sports where you have to have a very specific skill set that you need those additional hours of training. But we kind of lump the team sports, is what I would call like soccer, basketball, lacrosse, things like that, into it. So the recommendations so far have been kind of very broad and not specific. And I think we need to really kind of get more granularity in terms of how we are applying these recommendations and how we're translating this into policy to help prevent injury best.
So does your research indicate that there are specific sports where overuse or overdoing it with one sport is worse than others?
Certainly what I would term is more of the individual sports. So sports like golf, tennis, running, again, very repetitive in terms of what they're doing. We were talking earlier with Haley that, I mean, when you're a runner, you basically are doing a lot of running. You can do cross training. And that is hugely important to do strength training, to do various types of exercises to get the little muscles in line. But unfortunately, it's the same thing over and over again. And again, these kids are growing. These are not static bodies. These are repetitive, breaking down of muscle tissues and rebuilding them back up stronger, but at the same time, they're growing. And unfortunately, the research in general, in terms of overtraining and rest, is just not up to speed with what we're expecting these kids to do. So we don't have the best information, I think, to be able to really advise coaches, parents, and kids of how to do this safely.
Haley Pilati is a sophomore at Livonia High School, and she's a cross-country runner. We were just talking about running. How are you, by the way? How's your health?
I'm good. I was out for like 3 weeks with what we were concerned was a stress fracture. It just turned out to be tendonitis. But I'm back, and I've been running for like 2 weeks. It's been good. My foot hasn't hurt it, but my legs have, they've felt tired just from not training.
See, and that's what I was curious about, Haley. So you were out for 3 weeks, right?
About, yes.
Was it hard to be out for 3 weeks?
Yes, because I haven't really stopped running in, like, since I can remember. I did outdoor last year, ran over the summer and trained into cross country, and then ran into indoor, and then ran into outdoor, and it was going great. And, like, I run 5 to 7 times a week almost every day, so it was really hard to not do anything.
Hard.
Sit there.
You mentioned sort of physically trying to get back into it, the challenge there. Mentally, were you worried that you're losing ground to competitors because you're not training during those 3 weeks?
Yes. I had a lot of end of the season goals, and I still have them, but that time, those 3 weeks seemed like an eternity just because it was in the middle of preseason and I missed the first few meets. So it was hard because, you have to get these times. But mentally, I think it was even more hard just because running's what I love to do.
Sure. So I know you've been listening to this conversation. You've been listening to the doctors. You want to do what's best for you, your health going forward here. Is it hard to hear doctors talking about the change in culture, that we're kind of overdoing it, or that there's a risk of overdoing it? Because like you said, you love to do it. You want to do it all the time. Do you feel like your life is balanced?
I feel like my life is pretty balanced. I mean, I keep up with my studies, and I think you just need priorities to keep everything under control. I think we do overtrain sometimes, but I think maybe if you find a different way to keep yourself active without always vigorously going out on a run, I think it'll be okay.
Well, we got 3 student athletes in the room. Let's ask them all the same question then. If your family came to you and said, we got a vacation, but you got to miss, 2 games or 2 matches, 2 competitions and 3 practices. You going on vacation if they give you the choice, Haley?
Probably not.
You're saying no.
Yeah, I'd be kind of upset. We usually try and plan our vacations around track and competitions, but I'd probably be a little upset.
Okay. Charlie Siragusa, student at McQuaid.
I would definitely not want to go on vacation. Definitely would want to stay and play volleyball.
Charlie, you're going to Rome.
Well, if we are going to Rome, then...
You'll think about it.
I'll think about it.
You'll consider
it. I'll think about it.
So you got to get an overseas flight just to consider missing it.
Okay. It's all about context.
Jessica.
No, I wouldn't really want to go.
You don't want to go on vacation. Okay, so... Listen, we're not condemning the students for that. I mean, I'm smiling with them. I know the competitive spirit there. But Drs. Maloney and Rizzoni, I'm trying to figure out, they're not the first kids to come along to say, I'd rather not go on a family vacation and miss anything. But what do we have to say in those contexts? Sometimes we have to say, I'm sorry, right? I mean, that's part of the balance.
Yeah, it's part of being a parent, I think, and trying to know what's best for your child. I will admit, guilty as charged. I've planned vacations around, the 1 week when there's no football in August.
Probably everybody can relate to that.
Right. My younger boy plays basketball on a national team, and they're supposed to be in Virginia this week. And it's his class trip to New York City. And he decided he wanted to go to New York City with his classmates. So I commend him for making that choice. And, I think... As with everything else, peer pressure is a very strong thing, but they make a decision and their peers, I think, respect it, and hopefully it's something that can be contagious.
All right, before we get to your phone calls, Dr. Rizzoni, do we need to at least establish, if not a rule, a hard and fast rule, are there policy guidelines that we should set for if it's X and Y age, you shouldn't be playing more than X hours a week or for so and so many sports. You know, should that kind of advising be happening? Maybe it is happening. You know, what do you think?
It is happening. So, for example, in the state of Tennessee, there's actually a policy that they had passed with the High School Athletic Association that you can't play more than one sport at a time. So you have to pick between your travel team and your high school team, which I think everyone in the room can, you know, they're all, you know, thinking, oh my gosh, how would I choose that? Because that actually ends up bringing up other issues, I think, right there. And we have had various policies being passed. So, for example, some of the youth football organizations are changing when they allow tackling to occur at the beginning of the season and how their coaches have to be certified in the types of tackling that they teach. Because we know if you learn appropriate tackling techniques, you're going to decrease your risk of injury. And same thing overall in terms of some other sports, in terms of they're mandating that kids have to take a week off in between. And so it's coming. I think it's going to take a collective voice, and I think it's actually going to take, I know this sounds overused and out of place, but some courage by some of the adults to be able to say, enough is enough. We're going to set aside this time. This is important for multiple reasons. But at the same time, you know, continue to allow kids to enjoy what they do. You can hear how much these kids enjoy their sports. And let me just also say, these are not three average student athletes. They are all nationally ranked athletes, and they're also excellent students in the classroom. So they have obtained a great balance, which I think, you know, is a testament to them and their parents and is, again, wonderful traits that they're going to carry with them the rest of their lives.
Absolutely. We didn't invite these students because they're examples of everything that's wrong. I think they're examples of just the debate that happens in households. And when Charlie says he'd think about a vacation to Rome, you know, I mean, that's not Charlie's fault. We've been there before, but that's part of the conversation on balance. Well, let's get a short break. Parents, I want to get your phone calls for the rest of the hour. Tim and others, we're coming to you after the short break. You want to call the program, it's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Tomorrow morning, starting at 11 and going to 1 p.m., so 11 to 1 tomorrow, Dr. Rizzoni is answering questions from a national online audience, and you can join it during a Reddit Ask Me Anything online chat. That's 11 to 1 tomorrow. Go to reddit.com/r/science. You can start posting your questions at 8 a.m. tomorrow, and Dr. Rizzoni will be answering those questions there. So let's get to those phone calls after this short break on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on the next Connections, first hour, the Anti-Poverty Initiative. They made some progress with their reports and analysis and their plans for alleviating poverty in Monroe County. We'll talk to them about what's next. Then in our second hour, should Rochester be a big film town? Should we be trying to get more Spider-Man productions? Things like that. Some say yes, others argue it's a bad deal for taxpayers. We'll explore it. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We've got a packed studio. I got lost track of time there during the short break. And I want to get to your phone calls. Tim in Pittsford is first up on the phones. Go ahead, Tim.
Hey, Evan. I'm going to preface this by saying that I, of course, was the kid's age once in my life. I played baseball and basketball, which ended up being all year round, probably not as intense as it is now. And no one wants to see kids get hurt. I guess I have to stick up for the parents here. When you get old like me, which old to you guys is in your 30s, and that's what I am, I like to run 5 to 6 days a week, which means I have to get up at 3 in the morning, and then I have the perfect job for 40 to 60 hours a week. While I'm at my job, my wife and I get to plan on how we're going to cart our three kids around to these set activities. As soon as I get home from work, I get to cart you guys or my three little dependents around to their activities, and then we get home when it's dark out, and we put the kids to bed, and their responsibility, just like these kids, just like mine when I was younger, was getting up, going to school, and playing sports, which were fun, and you got to be with your friends, and maybe a job if you had time on the side. But as I look back on it now and realize how ungrateful I was to my parents and the sacrifices they made, this is preparing them for the pressures of real life. They're not going to realize that until probably well past college or whatever when they get real jobs. And again, no one wants to see injuries. But when I get injured, and I've had overuse injuries, I get to limp into work because I can't take 3 weeks off of work and still figure out how to cart people around and carry on the normal day or whatever you call normal. And I've got a 7-year-old that plays travel baseball. And in the beginning, I asked him every time, I go, you sure you're still interested in this? And kind of hoping he would say no. what's the kid going to say? Yeah, he gets to be around friends and play baseball. It's not tough.
So what's the solution, Tim? What should change? What do you think?
You know, there's two. I mean, when I was playing, it wasn't year-round. So now baseball is started in November, indoors. And then it continues until the season starts in April, goes till July. A lot of 7-year-old with 30-something games. So I think it's the year-round. That's just a lot different.
Tim, thanks for the phone call. 7 years old and a year-round baseball, or travel baseball, I don't think I'd heard starting at seven. That's really young. So let me start with the doctors here. What do you think about what you heard from Tim there, Dr. Rizzoni?
Well, I agree with him. And I just think that there's opportunities now that didn't exist even a decade ago. And it's in all regions. It's not just regions where you can get outside all the time. I mean, here, you know, to go along with the baseball, you have spring ball, and then you go into summer ball, and then you go into fall ball, and then they're going to keep doing batting practice. They're going to keep doing pitching technique throughout the winter. And again, it's really hard to say no, because even at seven, you're thinking to myself, oh my gosh, if I say no, if we don't do it this round, is he going to be able to make the team? Is he going to be able to stay with this group? Then what happens? Do I have to find another team? It's a lot of pressure.
Is year-round too much at seven?
I think it is. Yet, as I say that, my 7-year-old, now 8-year-old son is in a soccer club that we willingly enrolled him in. He loves it. He goes and he plays soccer in the backyard when he has that opportunity, which is, you know, hard because he also plays lacrosse. So he's 8 years old. I love sports. I do sports for a living. I want him to enjoy them as well, but I even feel pressured to say, well, maybe we'll just, you know, have him just hang out and just run around this summer. And we're not. Instead, we're planning on how are we going to coordinate all this in terms of the activities that the kids have.
And at least you can relate then to the parents' struggles.
Absolutely.
And Dr. Maloney, what do you think of what you heard from Tim?
Well, I think, you know, specifically with baseball, it is pretty well documented that, you know, the developing young athletes whose growth plates are open, they need a good 2 or 3 months of absolute rest. And that means no throwing and really stepping away from that activity. It's anecdotal, but you hear a lot that a lot of the collegiate baseball programs, they will look for their athletes from northern schools because they have the assumption that they're not able to play year-round and maybe have not had as much wear and tear on their bodies. So we know, I think, with baseball that there's a good amount of literature to support having a 2 or 3 month period of absolute rest from throwing that's going to be beneficial.
Tim also kind of gave a little bit of a heads up to kids to make sure you appreciate the sacrifices of your parents. Charlie, what do you think?
I am definitely one to say I don't always appreciate all my mom and dad do for me. I mean, they're half of their life is spent driving us around to practice or to tournaments, paying the plane fare, flying with us. So, I mean, I definitely do appreciate everything my mom does for me and mom and dad do for me.
Mom, that's big. That's self-awareness. That's you got that on the air on public broadcasting. That's big. Jessica, you want to get in good graces too? You agree with your brother?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Charlie. I mean, between the two of us playing, I mean, we have three sports and it's a lot of running around because a lot of the tournaments are no longer local always. It's only 5 hours away, but that's kind of turned
by
into
plane.
An every weekend event. So I definitely appreciate all they do.
That's a great message there, Tim. Haley, you want to respond as well as a student athlete?
Yeah, I definitely also appreciate it. Also, just even with practices or on the weekends, going to the track for an hour, hour and a half, driving me there, picking me up. As they said, also, meets aren't always close, driving down New York City, flying. It's a lot, but I definitely appreciate all they do and also the emotional support and, like, mentally helping me get through races.
All right, I'm going to get to Bobby in Pittsford next up on the phone. Go ahead, Bobby.
Hi there. Really great show, and I really applaud the student-athletes that you have there in the studio. They're really, they are well-rounded kids, and it is hard to balance. There's something that occurred to me when I was listening to their answers to your question about the choice of taking a vacation and missing a tournament or missing a game, I'm the mom of a young professional who's just out of college 3 years and now working. He was a student athlete in high school and in college, and I've always wondered why he never seems to want to go on vacation. And I'm now realizing that this is probably one of the reasons that we just didn't do that when he was in high school and college, because he was busy with his sports and he wanted to be. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. It's kind of, I guess it's what's occurring to me is that, you know, there's effects that happen that, you know, that affect your life. Not that I'm saying it's bad, but it's just very interesting. It's an interesting observation as a parent. And actually my son I'm speaking of is also, he's a teacher and he's a coach and basketball and soccer. So very interesting.
Bobby, thanks for the phone call. Dr. Rizzoni, you want to start? Go ahead.
It's been started to be researched more in the pediatric literature of this overscheduling and what are the direct and indirect impacts, not just for sports, but for all activities like language, music, lessons. And so one, it's a definitely recognized phenomenon that has been increasing within recent years. And second, so what does this mean? What does this translate to with this reduction in free play and really more about these organized schedules? We know there's probably direct and really indirect effects of that, both short and long term. Obviously, some of this is positive, but at the same time, potentially, you know, you could say something as Bobby was giving an example, that there are other ways that long term, that not just physically, but otherwise mentally and emotionally, that attachment to having something to do being scheduled continues.
Okay, Dr. Maloney?
Well, the one thing I keep thinking of is the chapter in Malcolm Gladwell's book about 10,000 hours, right? That if you're going to be excellent or
an expert, yeah,
at something, you've got to put that time in. And again, I think that's, you know, unrealistic for young kids to be able to commit that amount of time and effort to do that. And you know, sports should be fun. There should be an element of maintaining fun and hopefully not as much pressure. And that is what the games are meant to be. And sure, we're all competitive, but I think maintaining the fun in the sport is what's really important.
Joel in Rochester next up. Go ahead, Joel.
Hi. I wonder what the impact is, you know, and what the doctors think about the fact that most kids stop playing sports, organized sports, by the time they're 11 or 12 years old.
Joel, you're pointing out that a lot of kids start in sports and they quit by the time they're 11 or 12, right?
Yeah, we've got we almost have parity in terms of girls and boys playing sports, and yet by the time they're 11 or 12 years old or so, I think in part because of hormones, but I think also in part because of the professionalization of sports generally, a lot of kids get told either outright or, you know, in other ways that they aren't good enough. And so they give up playing sports and don't get all the benefits of playing sports, many of which you guys have been talking about for the last 45 minutes.
Joel, thanks for the phone call. So he's pointing out that, you know, when you're 11, or by the time the kids are 11 or 12, a lot of kids are giving up for these various reasons. Dr. Maloney?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, speaks to the idea of burnout. But again, I think you want to emphasize if it's something you enjoy and you're having fun with it, there are teams where you can play. You may not be playing for your high school basketball team, but there's CYO leagues and other things that you can participate in. And again, that's where you have to find the joy of that activity. And you'll always find people who have, you know, like skill levels and want to share that with you.
Dr. Rizzoni, one of Joel's points seems to be we put such an emphasis on winning and losing at a young age that it just becomes too intense, too much, as opposed to championing all the good things that come out of sports, fitness and all the other things. What do you think?
I agree. I mean, there's probably the estimates are 30 to 40 million kids participate in organized sports at younger ages. There's about 6 to 8 million kids who participate in high school sports. So where did all the rest of those kids go? And I definitely agree that there's other leagues out there, either through town leagues, CYO, all different types of just pickup stuff. But it's definitely, those are the kids that I'm actually interested in understanding better. You have these elite athletes, you have kids that maybe aren't so active, but then where did the rest of these kids go? Because really, if you don't make the high school soccer team, there are some opportunities in certain towns, but not all towns. And where do those kids go? They still want to be active. There's other types of activities nowadays that didn't exist, like climbing, like frisbee, like orienteering. There's all different ways to be able to be active without necessarily going through the traditional pathway. But still, I think a lot of those kids get lost and they do miss out on the benefits.
Remarkable amount of listener feedback that we're working through. Matt writes to the program on Twitter, perspective question for the doctors. In all the years both collectively treating high school athletes, what percentage have made it to pro sports?
There's a great paper from 2010, Molina, who did this, and he took both men and women, girls and guys, in high school and distilled it down to what percentage makes it to collegiate athletics and then what percentage makes it to professional levels. Now, if you look at it's a great table, it summarizes everything. If you want to get your kid to a professional level of participation, you have him play baseball. If you want him to get into college participation, you have your girls play hockey. So there's different numbers that are associated with each sport, but they're anywhere, I think, in terms of going from high school baseball to some type of professional level baseball, it was like 3-4%. Whereas something like basketball, going from high school basketball to NBA basketball, was less than 1%. So there's approximately 450,000 spots in the NCAA for Division 1, 2, and 3. Again, you're going from 6 to 8 million down to that, and then even less so further on. Not to mention, I really want to point out, the kids who make it through are the kids that stay healthy. And, you know, that can translate to a lot of different activities, dancing, any type of intensity. Those kids that stay physically and mentally and emotionally healthy are the kids that make it through.
All right, Steve writes to us on Twitter. At modified baseball game on Tuesday, he says, I watched a coach have a seventh grader pitch all six innings, more than 150 pitches for a seventh graders. I thought it was so thoughtless and dangerous. Do we have pitch counts at a younger age, Dr. Maloney?
Pitch counts are well documented. For baseball, there's a very useful website, usabaseball.com, has pitch counts by age. The challenge is, you know, you can count how many pitches an athlete throws in a game, but that doesn't take into account the warm-up pitches, the pitches before the game, what they do with dad in the backyard in between games, what they do with their friends. And so it's just to kind of give some guidelines. I know that Little League has some recommendations now about how many pitches in a week their athletes can complete. I think it helps, but by no means is that a perfect way to really know if it's too much, and certainly what he's describing is more than excessive.
So you're saying, okay, so you agree with him. Definitely excessive, what he witnessed.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I just want to add one thing real quick.
Go ahead, yeah.
In medicine, it takes about a decade to get out new knowledge in terms of what we should be doing.
Okay.
So we have a lot of this information, and that's why I think we're both trying to say, please go look at this, please go look at this, because if it doesn't get out to the coach, if it doesn't get out to the parents, it doesn't translate to benefit. So we have parents doing pitch counts, but not all coaches doing it. And so we have some parents who are taking some of the tackling training, but not all coaches are doing it and are still doing things that are very harmful to young kids, like the Oklahoma drill, which shouldn't be done with anyone, you know, in football. So we have to get the word out. And there's lots of different places. There's the CDC website has some great information. Obviously, your healthcare provider would be helpful for that as well. But there's resources out there to go and look if you have questions.
All right. So maybe one more set of listener comments for our entire panel as we get ready to wrap up. We couldn't possibly get through it all. I think so many people can relate to this discussion in different ways. But here are two different comments, similar idea. Ryan writes to us and says, I find the major issue is not diversity in sport, but rather diversity in life activity. Seems like our children are getting plenty of sports exposure, but are we prioritizing the arts, nature, food preparation, others in proportionate amount to sports? My guess is no. Michelle writes to us and says, I am all about sports, but the real trouble is that sports have become more important than other activities. Many parents have their children in so many activities that they no longer eat as a family, or they turn to fast food, or they do anything other than they don't do anything other than run to and from practices. Further, the activities go so late that kids can barely stay awake at school. I'm a firm believer of being involved, but I'm also a firm believer in structure and balance in a child's life. So Ryan and Michelle are saying similar things there. Sports can be great, But we, as a society, we're putting a lot of emphasis on sports, sometimes too much. We've got a mom at the panel, Lisa Saragusa. She's got athletes in her family, and every family is going to view this a little bit differently. How do you view those comments, Lisa? What do you think?
Well, I think they're fairly accurate. You struggle. I struggle as a mom trying to find that balance. We do spend most nights eating on the run. You know, we try to have food prepared in the home. Both kids are at the age now where they're cognizant of what they're eating. They're trying to eat better. So we try as a family to stay away from fast foods, but sitting down, having a meal together, that's a struggle. My husband and I try to stress other activities, for instance, music. Mm-hmm. I have encouraged, they might think it's more of, it's a mandate to make them follow through with their music and other things that they don't think is as important. But we try to keep a balance. But at the end of the day, their sports is what's most important to them and their academics. But it's a struggle to try, sure, to keep that balance.
Oh, to the Saragusa kids, I wish I would have stayed with piano. Guys, I mean, I listened to mom there. You know, I was like you guys. Haley, across the table, just some final thoughts from you on balance. What do you think about what you heard from our listeners who are worried about life balance?
I try and balance my life. I try and eat healthy. Obviously, with doing sports, you want to. I'm not very musical. I do participate in band. I don't do musicals, but I also find like passion through languages, and I take French and Spanish along with English, obviously.
That's great.
And so I like doing that. I'm not so musically talented, but I like using language as my other outlet.
Well, you see that we could roll with this conversation all day, because parents just relate. There's so many different struggles and layers to it. And though we've got to wrap now, I just want to remind you that Dr. Rizzoni, who's been on the panel today, is hosting a Reddit Ask Me Anything online chat on the subject of youth sports safety and all these related issues. That's from 11 to 1 tomorrow on Reddit. Easy to find, and if you never participated in a Reddit chat, piece of cake, it's reddit.com, and then it's /r/science. But starting tomorrow morning at 8, you can post questions and join the conversation from 9 to 11 with Dr. Rizzoni. Our thanks to Drs. Rizzoni and Maloney from UR Medicine. Thanks for being here. Great stuff for the parents and the listening audience, and for the students, parents who are here, PAC Studio. Good luck to all of you guys, both in health, school, sports, and more. John Andrus, engineer, Megan Max, a producer. I'm Evan. Talk to you Friday.